this is James from survivalpunk.com. Let's go! And hey, those recording levels look pretty darn good. If, recently, I've been struggling with the audio recently. It's been recording really low for some reason, and I don't know why. So, and I've been boosting the levels, and maybe it sounds good, maybe it doesn't. You guys haven't been bitching, so there's that. And that's always good. That you don't bitch. You guys should be stringing me up by the toes for not putting out as many episodes as I should be. I'm not even going to make excuses. I know I should. but with that, so before we get into the main topic, and the main topic, by the way, today is going to be on how to avoid taxes. More or less, legally. I'm not going to tell you how to tax evasion and go to jail. That's, I don't want you guys in jail. You don't want yourself in jail. I don't want myself in jail. It's not fun. So I'm going to talk about some mostly legal, not anything super illegal. I mean, obviously you could just not pay your taxes and go to jail. I mean, they threw Wesley Snipes in jail. There are a lot of ways to get around paying some or all of your taxes. And we'll talk about a few of those. We're not going to talk about, you know, just having 7 kids and not paying taxes, because then you have 7 kids you have to deal with. I'm not interested in that myself. Just make up paper babies. Oh, yeah, I had 6 tuplets this year. Yeah, I totally did. Yeah, so not going to pay any taxes, guys. Yeah. So that'll be the topic of today, how to avoid taxes. It'll be sort of a more fun episode, a somewhat thought episode, somewhat thought-provoking episode, and some a little bit of humor in there. And, you know, a lot of these things I actually practice myself. So I'm speaking from experience, because I don't like the government and I hate taxes. Taxes stuff, guys. Really. So, yeah. But before we get into that, let's take care of a little bit of housekeeping. We do have a phone number. I would like for next week to be a Q&A show. And for that to occur, you have to call me. Oh, and Matt from Oklahoma, just let me know that the voicemail message is not the new voicemail message saying, thanks for calling Survival Punk Podcast. It's still the old, like, knockoff Mentos song. So after I record this, I will update the message to, thanks for calling James at survivalpunk.com. Leave your message. If you call and you hear a song that sounds like the Mentos commercial song, that's the right show. You've called into the Survival Punk Podcast. So leave your message there. And I'll get that updated. So I think I have a few in there. I think a bunch of them are from Matt. So there's that. So it may be a whole Q&A episode just answering Matt's questions. unless if some of them are really intricate, I may have to break them out into their own episodes, you know. But if they're, I would like to have maybe 6 questions I can answer, you know, within like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes apiece. So do indeed call in, and the call-in number is 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. If you call in with a question, at this point, you're pretty much guaranteed to be on next week's show if I get enough questions. If not, then I'll have to maybe see if I can pick another topic, or if one of the questions is long enough to make it its own show, then I'll do that. But I would love to have a Q&A episode next week. And if I get those questions in, there will be an episode next week for Q&A. Guaranteed. Call me. I'll answer it. There will be an episode. No lazy procrastination. And possibly Couch Potato Mike may rejoin us. And if you're a new listener, you may not even know who Couch Potato Mike is. I can't remember the last time he was on an episode. But the Survival Punk Podcast used to have a co-host. as Jeff likes to call him, Couch Potato, what's his face? But yeah, do call in and I will get that show set up. Get your questions in. And I'll try to promote it a little bit so people will call in on social media. What else? Oh, to address something, and I need to respond to the guy via email. I got an email from a guy. I don't have it. I can't pull up the email right now. You know who you are. You are either now or were a law enforcement officer, a police officer. And thanks for listening to the show. I appreciate that, by the way. And obviously, if you listen to the show, you are or were a good police officer. I really doubt that any scumbag police officer would listen to the show. Anyone that would just, you know, beat up and shoot people for no reason. And I do believe a lot of that is being overplayed by the media. You know, most of these cases appear to be legitimate shootings. It was deserved. You know, every once in a while I'll see one that's like, oh, well, that cop, you know, is scum. He's a bad person. And it happens, you know, every industry, every job, every facet of human life will have scum that leaks into it. So there's that. But from the email, this guy sounds to be good. He listens to the show, so he's got to be good people. But his problem is he wants to suggest the show to grandkids, I believe, and friends at church. But he can't do it because I fucking use a lot of cuss words. Which is true. I do. And I will respond to him. Obviously, right now I am responding to you, sir. But I will respond to the email and let you know that I answered it on this week's podcast as well. You know, it's... And I've got that comment often that, you know, I'd like your podcast more if you didn't cuss. I would suggest it to kids if you didn't cuss. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing. I cuss by nature. And it's part of my vocabulary. I have a very large vocabulary, but cuss words tend to be useful. There is, you know, fuck is a very versatile word. It has a lot of things. And you know, there's been numerous scientific studies that prove that people that cuss tend to be more honest and smarter. You know, I don't even fathom how words offend people like that. Like, it just doesn't even, it just doesn't. They're just words. They have no magical superpowers. They are just words. Who decided in our history that six words are bad and shouldn't be said? Like, I just don't even comprehend that. So that's part of it. And some of the early Survival Punk podcast episodes did not have cussing. Originally, I was not going to use any F-bombs, sparingly on, like, even the word shit. No cuss words whatsoever, like, even marked in iTunes as not explicit. And those episodes were really bad. Because the whole time, me and when I catch potato Mike when he was on the episodes, because he was on the all the early ones, we would have to like watch ourselves and censor ourselves and think about it, and you don't get the good flow. You can't express yourself. It was taking our energy and our excitement from like 11, you know, down to like a 5 or something. And I felt it came off disingenuous, you know, that it would show a false persona, and people have an instinct for that. They can tell when people aren't being honest and truthful. And by not expressing myself the way that I would come off as dishonest. And I don't want that on a podcast. No one wants to listen to a podcast if they think that the host is a lying piece of shit. And that's what I would have came off as if I monitored and controlled and kept from cussing or went back and bleeped myself out, which is just, I hate bleeps. I hate that. And I've used that on maybe one episode. One episode was, we didn't cuss, except for like at one point where the power went out. It was an interview. And we just, you know, the vibe with the person that we were interviewing wasn't one of using cuss words. So we naturally just didn't. Like sometimes on interviews, I'll just not cuss, you know, just to be respectful of the other person so they don't have to bleep me out or whatever if for that. And, you know, it's just a switch in my head. It's like that work mode. It's like, you know, I go to a repo place, I don't cuss, but I don't want to do that for my podcast. And that episode, there turned to be one cuss word, and I went back and I threw a bleep over it. So just to like, for the guests, you know, basically. So that's one of the main reasons I won't enjoy it either. If I'm having to watch myself all the time on all of my podcasts to not say any cuss words, I'm just not going to do it. I mean, the Sorrel Punk podcast will just be closed. I just shut it down. I'm not doing it. Secondly, and this is another big point, the people who are offended by cuss words, I don't want them listening. Yes. I do not want people to listen to my show whom are offended by words. If cuss words bother you, then you are not the audience for this show. This is just like, not even not counting the cussing, this show is not for you. You will not enjoy it. You will never become a member of the Survival Punk Army. You know, you're not my customer. You're not my people. You're not my tribe. You'll never be in Survival Punks. You will be just an annoying linger honor that just bitches about everything. And I don't want you. I mean, so, you know, there's that. There is the fact that a lot of parents and grandparents will not let children listen to my show. And that too is okay. This is an adult show that handles adult subjects in an adult manner. So if there's an episode with a great enough message that you think you should, that you think your kids need to hear it, then you should listen to it with your kids with the explanation that James and Cash Potato Mike, when he's here, use adult language. It's okay because it makes a point. But it is not okay for you to use in school and to talk to adults, you know. As a kid, I knew, you know, what kid doesn't go around saying cuss words with their friends? But you know, when you go to school and the teacher's around, you know, or your parents around, you don't use those words, you know, because they're not really, well, we would have got our ass beat. I mean, that's just the truth of it, you know. Trying to shelter your kids so they never hear a cuss word, that's ridiculous. That's what's leading to this generation of fucktards. You know, and to think that they've never heard cuss words on the playground, come on now. Come on now. You the listener, when was the first time you heard a cuss word? Probably from your parents, or probably at school when kids are like, hey, I learned a new word. Fuck. What does it mean? I don't know, but you're not supposed to say it. You know, that's so, yeah, that's my response. Just because I haven't said it in a while, I will email this gentleman. But yes, the Charlotte Punk podcast uses adult language, will always use adult language, and that's all there is to it. So I, you know, maybe I could have some more listeners, but they wouldn't be true listeners. They wouldn't be survival punks. So, no, I'm not going to censor myself to get more listeners. I'd rather have less listeners that are my family than more listeners that are like that stupid uncle that no one likes that just comes to your house and gets drunk and throws up on the floor. Like, not that guy. Rather have more Matt French's and Jeff Dimitri's. So, oh my God, I wasted half the show talking about that. Seriously, I did. Good Lord. Time to get on to the show. How to avoid taxes. This one will not be a short one, probably. First thing, save seeds from the plants that you grow. So if you go to your big box store and you buy seeds to start a garden to grow tomatoes and peppers and, you know, whatever, cucumbers and whatever else you're wanting to grow. When you buy those seeds, you're going to pay taxes. You're going to pay a sales tax. It's going to go to your state or whatever. So you're paying taxes on those. There are ways online to buy seeds and avoid the taxes. You can join Seed Savers and probably, I don't think there's a tax on that. You avoid taxes online on a lot of purchases. But more than likely, for your initial seeds, especially if you buy heirloom seeds, which is the point of the story, you're going to pay taxes. So you can do that. But if you gather seeds from some of what you grow, you know, your tomatoes, if you get seeds from your tomatoes, your cucumbers, your squashes, your tomatoes, I already said that, your peppers, whatever it is, if you save some of those seeds, that next planting, the next season, you're not paying taxes. And if you save a portion of your seeds every year to replant, you're never paying for taxes on the plants that you grow again, that you grow from the seeds that you save. No more taxes. Not to mention the fact that by growing your own food, you're not buying that portion of the food that you're eating from the plants that you grow and not paying taxes on those. You're basically eliminating multiple taxes from the fact that you're not buying more seeds and you're not buying that food that you're eating from your garden. So that's a double whammy. By saving your seeds, I mean, that's, you know, you put in effort to grow those seeds, you know, but it's not like grueling, backbending labor. Most of us enjoy going out there and watering our plants and harvesting. I mean, you know, it's It's a little bit of work for a... There's my alarm. You know, it's a little bit of work for a huge payoff. And a payoff with dividends. Tax-free dividends, too. So, save your seeds. And grow your own veggies. The next one is brewing your own beer. Or growing tobacco, but we'll start with beer. Because I know something about brewing your own beer. I don't drink anymore, but when I did, I started getting into beer brewing. Brewing in general. I never made a hard liquor, but I made some beers and some wines and some mead and made really good, well, from what Castro Mike tells me, a really good hard lemonade one time, and even pushed up the alcohol content via freeze distillation, which is not illegal, unlike regular distillation. But yeah, brew your own beer. So beer and cigarettes, they have a sin tax on them. Sin tax. Because this is the country we live in. And that, on cigarettes, the tax tends to be pretty outrageous in a lot of areas, you know, and just more and more expensive everywhere. California, I don't know how people in California even smoke. You can't smoke anywhere. And the tax is ridiculous. Same in New York. I don't understand it. Yeah. And I will, in the show notes, include the link for the episodes. A three-part episode on brewing, which will, you know, I broke it down to being the easiest method possible to brew to get a decent output. You know, the beer that I brew is better than a Bud Light. I mean, you know, if you like flavor, if you like taste, if you enjoy the flavorless Bud Light, then by all means, I'm sure making a clone Bud Light would not be hard. Ugh, not hard at all, guys. But it's easy. You're gonna pay a sales tax on buying your malt and whatnot, but it's, correct me if I'm wrong, I do not believe the individual components have sin tax, i.e., if you buy cigarettes, the completed form, you're paying a sin tax. If you buy a case of beer, you're paying the sin tax on it. Not just sales tax, but the added sin tax is built into the price. If you buy malt extract, you are not paying a sin tax, only the sales tax, which is whatever your state is, tends to be fairly low, not that expensive. And, you know, if by God's sake, if you grow your own barley and malt it, I don't even know how much. I don't know how many plants, how big of a field you'd have to grow barley. You also have to have hops. I don't even know if that would be applicable on a small scale farm just to produce enough beer for you. Maybe. I don't know. If you have experience, let me know in the show notes. Or let me know in the comments on thrallpunk.com. But malt extract and stuff is not terribly expensive. I want to say brewing, and it's been a couple years, so prices could have gone up. And, you know, setup expenses were fairly low for the way that I did it. But I want to say brewing a batch was like maybe $15 or so for 5 gallons of beer. So, you know, that's a few six packs. And I want to say when I averaged out the cost, it came out to being some of the cheapest beer, but with a better flavor. So, you know, like, there's no way that I could go buy 5 gallons of Guinness for the price that I brewed my homebrew Guinness. Just couldn't do it. Not even close. Guinness was probably better, but mine was better than, you know, the stuff that the equivalent price of what you could get. So, and if you got really into it, I'm sure that your skills would grow and you could make a better brew. So, definitely more something to look into. Check out the shows. There are three long episodes on how to brew. The first one is beer. The second one is, I think, cider. And the third one is experiments, I think. Wine, maybe. You can make some, like, cheap hobo wine and stuff really, really easy. And, you know, like all of this, you just avoid paying taxes. And, you know, it's a hobby. It's fun. It's something to do. Same thing with tobacco. I don't know how many tobacco plants you'd have to grow and if it'd really be worth it. But if you are addicted to tobacco and the shit hits the fan, I think growing your own tobacco and saving the seeds and continuing to grow tobacco for your own personal use, probably better than just going Nick Fit crazy and killing people. Just saying. You can make your own gas and diesel. And at some point when I get reset back up, I will have Stephen Harris on the show. And I don't know what we'll talk about. And I'm sure there'll be many F-bombs and a few wily rabbit holes that go down. But Stephen Harris has a book. I think you have a website at makemyowngas.com. Making your own gas is not terribly hard, especially ethanol. I think he teaches you how to make ethanol, not gasoline per se. But as he says, modern cars can run pure ethanol pretty damn easy. Which is weird that they're like, ethanol will rust your gaskets and do this, that, and that. But they tell you to put ethanol heat in your car when there's water in your lines to get it out. So it's a lot of contradictions, and contradictions cannot exist. So one is right, one is wrong. I'm going to believe Stephen Harris on this. And apparently to make your own gas, you start out by fermenting sugars that turn into ethanol, and then you have to distill that into a higher concentration. Then you have to use, I believe they're called zeolite, to absorb the remaining water percentage to get to the high enough pure ethanol percentage to burn in your car. At which point, obviously, like I said earlier, distillation is illegal by the federal government unless you get a license to distill for consumption, which you're not going to have. Unless you're opening a business, you're not going to get that license. You're not. It's too expensive. It's too much hassle. There's too much paperwork. You're not going to do it. Unless, like I said, you are going to open a business. Or if you're going to do like this, you're going to make your own gas. We'll call it a license. I think it's like a $15 fee, maybe, that you have to pay. You fill out a form. You send it in. Basically, it's just pointless tax revenue for the government, which, okay, granted, I don't think it expires. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it expires. So once you get that license, you're good. Yes, you are paying a tax, but once you pay that tax, it's not a recurring tax, I don't believe. So you don't have to worry about that. And you have to add, I think, 2% gas by volume to your mixture to make it legal. Like, you can't just distill it and leave it like that. You have to add gas, which then makes it, you know, undrinkable, because they don't want you to make moonshine, for heaven's sake. Ugh, government. They don't want you to make moonshine, so you have to add the gas, makes it undrinkable, then you can use it in your car. So there's that. And if you get if you get the fermentables, so whatever you use to make your base with, cheap or free enough, then it becomes maybe not necessarily like really good, but as a supplement, a cheaper supplement, then it works. If you're buying just, you know, if you're going to Walmart and buying bags of sugar to convert that sugar straight to ethanol, I don't think the cost works out now. If gas was to spike really high, you know, like, God, years ago when it was like $4 or $5 a gallon, then it may balance out then. As it is now, it's more or less a way to supplement, avoid taxes, recurring taxes, you know, and fun learning experiment, basically. I don't believe even Stephen Harris is saying that you as a small home scale producer are going to really be able to, unless you don't drive very far, you know, if you're a local commuter, it might work for you. And that'd be something I could ask him when I get him on. So, biodiesel tends to be a bit easier and even cost effective. You know, if you have a diesel engine to make biodiesel, I mean, hell, you can even run it on pure, like, you know, grease, basically. But that tends to be a lot easier, especially if you can get the grease for free or cheap. You know, that tends to balance out really well, so you avoid paying taxes. You know, because that's a large portion of the fee that you're paying for that. I mean, if you own a farm vehicle, you know, or a construction vehicle that runs on diesel, you know that you can put the red dyed diesel in there because it's not for road traffic ever. Huh. Which makes me curious. Is it illegal when they take, like, combine equipment on the road down a little bit? Like, because, you know, you live in the country, I do, rural areas. Every once in a while, you'll see, like, a tractor or a combine or, you know, something riding down the street to get to another part of their field or something. Is that travel illegal? Could they get pulled over and arrested? Because I'm betting they have the red dyed diesel in there. Excuse me. I got all choked up. Stupid government. But yeah, if you have something that's not going to travel on the road that runs diesel, then you can put that in there. You know, if I really got choked up, coffee went down the wrong way. That might be something to think about, to store some of that for the shit hit the fan. If you have a diesel vehicle and, you know, you have some of that stored, you know, obviously the government's not going to be harassing you when the shit hits the fan. Or they probably will, but, you know, whatever. Chickens. So if you go to the co-op today and you buy chickens, you're going to pay a sales tax on them, I'm sure. But you're not going to pay tax on the eggs that they lay for you for the rest of their lives, the rest of their egg-laying lives. That's a great way to avoid taxes. There are some tricks here, and I'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, once you get those chickens and they're laying eggs and you're eating those eggs, my computer says the battery's dying. Hold on, guys. Sorry about that. I wonder how long that's been unplugged, actually. And maybe in post-production, I will try to eliminate that minute of silence there. That is weird. Yeah, it wasn't charging. But anyway. So you're not buying eggs. So that's of money. That's an expense saved right there. You're not paying tax on the eggs that you're buying. And I know right now, as of recording, egg prices have dropped ridiculous. Ridiculous. Like 5 dozen for a buck or something. And so probably can't even afford to feed your chickens to get eggs anywhere near that price. But your eggs are a much higher quality. The shit eggs coming out of the store are not nearly as healthy, but man, they're cheap. So yeah, if there's another tax avoidance, if you get a rooster and you fertilize a few of those eggs and you allow them to hatch, then those chicks, hopefully they're girls and not boys, and if they are, you can eat them. Those chickens, when they start laying eggs, you didn't pay taxes or buy them chickens or on the eggs. Like, it's a whole string. Like, same thing with livestock. We'll just combine that real quick. If you go buy a cattle, I'm sure you're going to, and I tried to look it up and I didn't really find an answer. If you go buy a cow or any livestock, I mean, breeder rabbits, goats, whatever. If you buy that, unless you buy it from a person, and that's a good idea, you're going to pay taxes on that. You know, you can probably avoid that, and it'd be best if you could avoid that. But yeah, if you buy that, then that one is going to have taxes on it. Maybe you can avoid it. But then if you get a breeding pair, so if you have rabbits and you get, you know, male and female rabbits, and then their offspring that you plan to eat, you will not be paying taxes on. That's tax-free meat and delicious. If you let a couple of those rabbits grow up to become the new breeding stock, then you didn't pay tax on that breeding stock, and then the ones that the meat rabbits that they produce, their spawn, you're not paying taxes on. Tax freedom. I get really excited talking about tax freedom. Fuck taxes. But yeah, that's, you know, and so I want to wrap all that up into if you have, you know, chickens and whatnot, and this would be a whole episode, probably would need a guest to explain it better. But if you start a hobby farm, you can't see, but I'm doing air quotes, a hobby farm, you are allowed to tax deduct a lot of things, including vet trips and livestock feed. And, you know, obviously you could, I think with the government, you can claim a loss for like 3 years before they're like, okay, yeah, your business has failed. You're not going to get any more tax write-offs. Check out CPA, blah, 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 blah. Worth looking into, starting like these micro fake businesses just for tax write-offs. And even if you tax write them off for like 3 years and then go under and make a new one some other time, that's something to look into. For just a while, you can just say you're selling eggs and just call that a loss. Something to look into. Owning a business allows you to make a lot of tax write-offs and get out of a lot of taxes. The more you look into it, the better your CPA, so-and-so, the more money you can get out of. So, and it's worth looking into. It could be an entire several shows topics. I'm not an expert. Check your CPA, blah, blah, blah. Not a tax attorney. You know, but it's worth looking into. It's worth looking into. Yep. Next, don't buy new. Buy from yard sales, flea markets, and online places where taxes aren't collected. I know a lot of... Sometimes I've got stuff on Amazon and I've paid taxes. Sometimes I haven't. I think it has to do with where the seller is located and where you're located. Some places just aren't going to take your taxes. I think if you live in, not Arizona, if you live in Arkansas, you're going to pay taxes. Probably New York, California, probably going to pay taxes. Other places, Tennessee is sort of hit or miss, you know. If you order from eBay, I think sometimes you pay taxes, sometimes you don't pay taxes. other online vendors. And the government was really pissed out about it at first because you weren't paying taxes on anything online, which was great. You know, it was like the Wild West. And the government was like, God, that's a lot of money. We need our taxes. We need our monies. Idiots. That's if you're going to buy online and one place has a price and taxes, one place has a price and not taxes, depending on what the difference is, I would probably always choose to buy from the non-tax place first. Just saying. If you buy from yard sales with cash, yeah, the yard sale people are never going to charge taxes. I mean, if I go to a yard sale and someone's like, okay, that'll be this, but then I got to add tax, I'm going to just leave. Oh, I'm not paying taxes at a yard sale. Same thing with flea markets. I've never paid taxes there before. I know some flea market people are taking debit card transactions now and credit cards via like Square and whatnot. That's a genius idea, by the way. If you have a yard sale, make sure you get one of those things. Because people are like, I'd like to buy that, but I don't have enough cash. And I'm like, I take Square. You know, before when I had a shirt inventory, basically, when I saw a punk shirt inventory, I would carry around the Square thing with me so I could take debit cards. You know, it's more people have debit cards than cash now. So, you know, whenever I go to like events and stuff and people are like, oh, we only take cash here. I'm like, why don't you get a Square, you idiot? But anyway, and that's kind of sort of off the books, but not really. If you do with that, there's a record. If you pay with cash, there's not. So yard sales, flea markets, no records, pay with cash, don't pay taxes. It's great. It's great. And you can find a lot of things that you like. That could be a whole episode. I've built a sort of, for a bug out bag challenge, I built a bug out bag, and a lot of the stuff came from a yard sale, including the bag and like a cook kit and several other things, you know, for pennies. It's a good place to practice your haggling skills. It's, you know, yard sale people, there's kind of two mindsets. They either expect you to haggle, or they have no haggling skills. They're just like, the price is marked on there. Yeah, but I don't know. You know, they can't comprehend haggling. So it's a skill not that used. In America, we don't, like, the haggling skill is kind of down. Like, other parts of the world, haggling is like a way of life. You're expected to haggle. Like, in some of the open-air markets and stuff, they're insulted if you don't try to haggle, like, you just going to give me the price I asked for? Yeah, that's what we do in America. No, you got to haggle. So that's a way to sort of break that if you have that haggling hesitancy. You can do that. It's worked for me. I went to a Army surplus store in Clarksville, Tennessee one time. And really close to Fort Campbell Army Base, by the way. Best place. Ran by like a guy and his Korean wife. And they had a Camelback ACU carrier. So Camelback carrier didn't have the bladder inside of it. Already had a bladder, so I didn't really care. And you know, it had some minor cosmetic damage. And they wanted $20 for it, which probably a fair price, probably. And it was the Korean lady working that day, not her husband. You know, and just through like the walkaway method and some other stuff, I got it marked down half price. And I'm sure she still made a profit at that. Like, you know, she was going to go down, but I'm sure there's lots of suckers that would have been like $20. Yeah. Okay. You know, I got some really good deals from that place a lot. Like my military sleep system I got from there. Genuine military sleep system, not one of the Chinese knockoffs. I got it for I don't remember. Maybe a little over 100, maybe. I don't remember. But I got it for a good price. Whatever it was, I got it for a good price. So yeah, yard sales. And it's summertime. It's yard sale season. So there's that. You can find a lot of good deals there. You can get a lot of stuff you need from there. And there are a lot of good deals to find for resale there. If you have the inclination, buying things from yard sales for ridiculous, like, pennies, and then selling them on eBay to people that are stupid or just know the value, or you find gems at the yard sales, and then you find out what they're actually worth, or you know what they're worth when you buy it, and then you resell it for a huge profit. There is, maybe I'll include a link in the show notes. And I didn't watch the whole video. I watched like a few minutes of it. There's a YouTuber, Idaho Hillbilly. I don't watch a lot of his videos. Or like any, to be honest. But I saw one pop up. It was like, eBay's on fire right now, blah, blah, blah. I haven't sold on eBay in several years now, to be honest. It's and I made quite a profit on eBay when I did sell. I'll tell you what I did in a second. But yeah, he showed one thing before I cut the video off, and I watched something else. Probably some ancient civilization conspiracy video that I've been hooked on recently. But yeah, he bought this music box of some sort for, like, I think he said 33 cents. And he sold it for 30 or 40 bucks. Huge profit. So, one time on eBay, I found a guy selling comic book boxes. Like, you know, the boxes that, you know, if you go to a comic store, the boxes they sit in, the box you store them in, they hold, I don't know, 40, 100, whatever the amount the comics are. And he had a whole garage full, and his wife was like, get rid of them. Get rid of your comics. So I guess he went through and got rid of the ones that he didn't like. I don't know. He had listings for several boxes of comics, and there was no reserve on them, which, if you don't know eBay, reserve is like, it must hit this amount of money before I'll sell it. If it doesn't hit that amount, then the listing ends and, you know, no one wins. No reserve, starting bid of a penny. Shipping was 20 bucks because it's a box of comics. It's like, I don't know, 30 pounds or something. It's heavy. So, you know, obviously that was an applicable amount of money. I don't know how much it actually costs to ship, but, you know, hopefully he built some profit into the shipping. I always do on eBay, you know. I always make sure that the shipping will cover packaging, my time, postage. I'm not going to ship something at a loss. Well, I'm just not. So, unless I know that the profit will be up front and the having no shipping will incentivize people. It, you know, you run a business, you know these things. So yeah, I bought a lot of comics, so a box, for one penny. I just bid for the opening bid and no one else did, so I got it. And out of that many comics that I paid $20.01 for, I had two number one issues from, actually, Jonan Vasquez, the guy that made the Invader Zim TV show, if you remember that, from the 90s or whatever. So, shortly after that, like a year or so, I went to the, I think, 2005 comic convention, and I took comics that I had, those two, Johnny the Homicidal Maniac number one, Squee number one. So I picked comics that I had, not just from that box, but from other comics that I had that I knew creators, the people that did those comics, were going to be there at that convention, and I had them sign them, and then I resold them. So I sold Johnny the Homicidal Maniac number one, signed by Jonan Vasquez, for $20 plus some amount for shipping and handling, probably $5 or so. And then I sold that Squee number one for, it was between $15 and $18. I don't remember because it's, you know, it's been like a decade almost. Those two comics right there more than paid for that whole box, you know, it covered that. And hell, I could keep parting them out. There's a couple of junk ones that would have no resale value at all, but several of them obviously would have some resale value. So there's a lot of money to be made on eBay. Tax-free. I didn't collect taxes for those, so there's that. Last two things. Barter. So a trade, a value for value between men shouldn't be taxed and isn't taxed. Although there is tax code written for barter where you're supposed to pay taxes based on the value that you think it is, blah, blah, blah. The government doesn't know, so don't tell them. Don't tell. That's my policy on barter. And it could be between items. It could be between money. I mean, yeah, technically, you're trading Federal Reserve notes for whatever the person is going to give you. But between the two of you, you're bartering that, whether it's an item from that person. Like here in the state of Tennessee, it's perfectly legal to buy a gun from a person with no paperwork. You can give them cash. They can give you the gun to get services rendered, i.e. your buddy's a mechanic. You're going to trade hit. Like here in the Deep South, the standard barter is a six pack for auto mechanic work. Obviously, if you're going to change an engine, sometimes it goes a bit more, but usually a six pack will cover most things. You have to buy the parts. They'll come do it. That's the trade equivalency here. So, and maybe you homebrew that six pack. And then you're not paying taxes on that either. Double whammy, guys. Or maybe you're both going to barter services. You're a mechanic, and you don't want the standard six-pack. You want something else. And your buddy is, an electrician, and you got some electrical work you need done. So you're going to fix his car, and he's going to fix your electrical problem, whatever it is. There's no need to bring the government into that. It's an equal trade. You don't pay taxes on an equal trade. And there's no reason to even say it. So, I think that we, all of us punks, should be bartering a lot more, both with services and items. If you have something that I need, I'll give you something that you need, vice versa. And lastly, before I wrap up and get off here, because this show has gone a decent amount of time, mostly because I ranted that I'm a cusser. Lastly, it is more or less a method that will work in if you just really vehemently oppose taxes and want to protest them a little bit, then one way to pay less taxes is to make less money. The more money you earn, the higher the tax bracket you go, the more you're taxed. And I've been there before, there's like this funky, funky threshold where like you get a raise, but they tax you at a higher tax bracket when you get that raise, which negates the raise. And a lot of times you're doing more or harder work and literally making the same amount of money because you're being taxed harder. And that has always boggled my mind, to tax productive working. Like, and I just finished listening to Atlas Shrugged, so I have some really good thoughts on this, but we're not going to go deep into it. To tax production like that boggles the mind. It needs to be incentivized. You want your hardest working people to work harder. Do you want to incentivize the lowest producing people? I mean, for God's sake. Right now, and I'm job searching, right now I stock Third Shift. I put up boxes. The stuff that you buy, I put on the shelf, and I make, and my raise every year now is the same amount as the lowest producing person. So the slowest piece of shit makes the same raise and basically gets paid the same as me. It's communism, guys. It's communism. Whether I do all the work assigned to me and then go help several other people, because naturally I just work fast and hard, I get paid the same amount. I get paid the same amount whether I do that. If people drag their heels and stand around and talk all night, they get paid the same. And, you know, they have to get help because they're not done. They get paid the same. The solution in James's world, you pay them by the box. You pay by the actual work performed. Much like a mechanic gets paid per job. So they get paid like change, and I'm just quoting, changing an alternator is $70. So if the mechanic changes the alternator in an hour, they make $70. They change the alternator in 4 hours, they make $70. They change it in 30 minutes, they make $70. See what I'm going here? So if you paid person by actual output of labor, you solve that problem. Your hardest working people, aka your valuable people, your people that you need, are going to make more. Your shittiest people are going to make less or work harder. The hourly pay thing is retarded. I'm sorry. It incentivizes wasting of time. It does. If I could, I mean, how many, oh my God. It would be a boon for both the hardworking people and the companies. Because yes, they're going to pay some people a lot more money, but they're going to get a lot more done. They just are. And, you know, the problems, the people that don't pull their weight, will solve themselves. So that's James's solution. That's what grinds my gears. Back to the point, reduce your income. If you make less money, you don't get taxed as hard. If you make a super lot less money, you basically won't get taxed. That amount though, and finding a way to live on that amount of money is really hard. I think it's under like $11,000 a year here in the United States to not get taxed, and living on that amount of money. Oh, good luck, guys. I don't know, but people are doing it and it's worth looking into. You've got to basically be a bum. I mean, but the government's not taking your money, and we're not even going to go into the whole IRS, where that money goes. Does it even go to do anything for the federal government, or does it all go to the Federal Reserve to pay for the fact that our currency is loaned to us at interest? Not a conspiracy. I could not find a definitive answer. Different things go different things, so I don't know. But your income tax money that comes out as that goes to the IRS, I think only goes to the Federal Reserve, because I couldn't find a good answer otherwise. The other taxes on your tax, on your check that you look at your check stub, go different places. Sales tax, state sales tax, all that stuff, different places. There are taxes every day. And with that are my thoughts on how to avoid paying taxes. At least some taxes to some degree. It's definitely a subject you and I should both look into a lot harder, because fuck taxes. And that's why. There is a Cheryl Punk Army. You can join it. $5 a month really helps out the show. It helps to offset the costs, you know, like the server cost, which eventually I'm going to have to upgrade to a more expensive server. You know, and if you like the show, consider joining the Sorrel Punk Army. You can find out more at sorrelpunk.com. And with that, DIY to not pay taxes, you guys.